2017, I got 601. We got Alderman Teeling, Alderman Klosemon, Alderman Funkhauser, and Alderman Cove present and staff. Citizens' comments. If none, move on. Minutes for correction approval for April 5th, 2017. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, new business. Item 1, EDC 2017-27, building permit report for March 2017.
In March, we added 21 new single-family homes. 8 were low incentive program, 13 were single-family homes. Smattering of commercial permits, mostly rehabs. Some of the standouts, you might notice, Home Depot had their restrooms closed down for the whole month of April, pretty much. That was one of the permits they actually did bring in. I requested that they brought in temporary facilities, and they brought one of those portable trailers in and everything else. So we didn't have any complaints about it. Usually if people shut down part of their bathrooms, we'd have that. So I was actually surprised with how much money they actually put into their bathrooms over there. So it was a substantial. It's much nicer bathrooms and finishings than you see in most high-end restaurants. Put it that way. They spent some money. I think they spent like $240,000 just remodeling their bathrooms. And employee break room.
So, a demo.
Yeah. So it was that was a pretty significant actual. I thought it was going to be a simple thing. I went there to look at the final. So, some high end stuff. But that was the big standout for the commercial aspect. But now we're at 21 for this month. Last year, we only did 16 this month. So we're about 20% higher than last year. So roughly overall.
Any questions? If none, item number 2, EDC 2017-28, building inspection reports for March 2017.
Okay. As usual, mostly, or all of them are building incentive programs, because the last few months were predominantly build program applications. Nothing really crazy on this one, just a lot of residential and a few commercial inspections.
My debt passed final, by the way.
Did?
All right.
Or official.
I told Bob not to let it pass the first time around. But he's like, couldn't find anything wrong with it. I asked him, I said, you know, that's Carlos' house. I said, triple check everything, 100%. And he's like, it's great, everything's good. So
once the weather warms up, you can have a party.
I already opened the pool, man.
Oh, you did?
So I got a heater.
Oh, big gas line back there.
Big gas line. Big pool. Big gas line.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there, I mean, just. That's about it. There wasn't much of a stand-up besides a lot of residential stuff. Ryan Holmes opened up their houses there. They're very basic house, but they're entry-level house. One thing I can say on that is that their appliances, besides the furnace, are all electric in those houses as of right now.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Corporate apparently believes that electric will sell better to apartment renters who move to residential, but apparently their corporate headquarters are far down south where electric is more common. So, despite the fact that I spoke with their corporate and so did their superintendent on the job site, who asked me to speak to their corporate forum and told them that almost everything up here is natural gas, regardless of if it's rental or not.
Right.
They insist that gas, electric is the way to go.
So. And where's that at?
It's in Caledonia.
Oh, Caledonia. Really?
Now they're thinking this is transition from rental type product to first home buyer, and they're thinking that transition instead of making a change from electric to gas.
Yes, they're seeing it as a transition home and keep it as similar to apartment as they can. And I don't even know what the price point is in those units. I have asked several times, and no one can really tell me. They haven't figured it out yet.
What's the square footage?
Between 19 and 23, I think, at the max.
Okay, so it's not bad. It's still good.
But most of the homes in there existing were what? 2 to 3,500.
Oh, yeah, the houses are pretty good.
They're of a similar nature to Pulte's line.
The lower.
Right to the north of Autumn Creek Elementary School.
Right, the smaller ones.
Yes,
right.
The ones when they were just turning that part of the subdivision to get to the new section.
Right.
Yeah. I had both electric hot water heater and a gas. I like the gas one much better. Because the things that go in to heat up the water usually go bad after a while.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We did note to I did make a note on their permit report, so we did reach out to their corporate and request that they think about transitioning to gas, and they said no, I just didn't want to have anything down the line with homeowners calling us saying, well, why didn't you make them put gas in. We don't have that option, but I wanted to give them the option. They have adequate, everything's adequate to do it. They just chose not to, so.
So they're not running the gas to get the homeowner the option to swap out?
They have gas pipe there, but the plumber wanted offered as an option for $200, which is not even covering the cost of material, because he felt that he should run gas pipe, but they still said if you can add it on for only $200, then you can cut some off the price. That's exactly what they told him. So the plumber said, no, we'll just leave it. But he is running adequate size pipe where they can tap on it in the future.
To the house.
Yes.
But not to the locations.
Yes, there's plenty of gas pipe there. I mean, it's just like a normal house, but it's just there's no piping inside the house at this point, besides just the furnace.
Right. So. Much smaller house, a standard meter is going to cover the house.
Oh, yeah.
So, I mean, if you add to it, it's not going to put it be too much of a load anyway.
Standard gas meter covers 304,000 BTUs, so, yeah.
I have a commercial on that.
That pool heater, right? I inspected that pool heater. That's a big pool heater. What's it, like 225,000 BTU heaters?
250.
Not 250, yeah.
Just for the heater.
Yeah.
So
you see the steam coming off.
NetCorp was very gracious to give me a bigger meter. They were very happy to do it.
You can navigate by the Cliff Curls gas meter.
You walk by and it goes, you can hear natural gas being pumped through.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the only thing that was pretty much new on the inspection report during that month when we started doing those inspections. So
great.
Okay. We'll move on to item number 3, EDC 2017-29. Property maintenance report for March 2017.
Okay, we heard 7 cases in March, the vast majority of which were motor vehicles. And the ones that were dismissed here are people that had either gotten their sticker renewed, they had the vehicle towed off and were given away or made inoperable. The one on Granite Trail, which seems like it's quite a bit of money, that was because that had been a multiple offender and a long-standing issue, so the hearing officer felt that they should receive a more substantial fine than $75. But the rest of them were pretty much standard $75 tickets where it was dismissed. I will say that the motor vehicles at hearings, it gets very, very loud. People don't like those tickets, those citations for some reason. I don't know why. But they put out, and we have a lot of them. The police generally keep someone closer. Besides just that the chief is here with us.
When it says standing dripping water, what is that actually?
Oh, that was the one, that was the,
The outside spigot was dripping?
No, that was, yes, that was, the grain silo right off of the road tracks, the same in that Lex division, right by the golf cart shop. Mm-hmm. There was standing water there, and what it was is there's actually a storm drain there, and it appeared to be that the pipe was dripping there, but it actually wasn't. The storm drain was just all clogged up, so it was sitting in a pooled area. It's actually technically impossible for the water to make its way out of that pooled area because the storm drain is like 6 inches higher in elevation than that area.
Mm.
And we had Bob went out and handled that one, and he told me about it, so I went down there and looked at it myself. I was thinking maybe we could have Public Works bring some fill in or just a little gravel or whatever, but it's actually not. If you fill it, then they can't have access to the building, so it's just kind of it's one of the oldest subdivisions or subdivision areas in the city, so things are a little bit different there. So it's just, all it is just the storm drain gets clogged up all the time, and then that water just kind of sits there and sits stagnant. But it wasn't actually coming off the building.
Okay. That's the one that Jackie brought up about the downtown. And then the Wing Road property, that's being
handled
currently.
We're on a cycle on that particular property. Yeah. I drive by it every day, and I make a lot of things that are there going on. It's obviously the home occupation going on, so... Yes.
Okay, that'll come up in the next adjudication.
Mm-hmm. Actually, we went out.
It was today. Just today. Went out, so it was going.
Okay. Yeah, I went out today, I think.
I mean, they've been cited before.
Yeah, and I knew they had been. They kind of remedied it for a little bit, and they're back at it.
Yeah, well, they had told us they would be out of there by this point in time, so I don't know. I haven't spoken to Big Sky Management. Bob was out there today. I believe he drafted the notice of violation.
Okay.
The this afternoon, and they'll be sent out first thing in the morning. And Bob's going to try to reach out to the lady that runs Big Sky Management and see what the process of them being there or not being there, because we've started now to cite the tenant and the landlord. So hopefully this way we can get their attention. And I think the last time the hearing officer went very easy on them because of the fact that they had told him and showed him that their lease was broken and they were leaving. But they had been out there by the start of this month. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I thought we had taken care of that. I happened to go by this weekend and I saw Jackie's email and then... Yeah, fair enough.
No, I had hoped.
Okay.
Keep working on it.
Okay. Anything else? Item 4, EDC 2017-30, Economic Development Update.
Okay, hi everyone. I'm going to go through this quickly, because if you have any questions, you can just chime in. Downtown, I'm anticipating that next month we'll be before you with a new inducement resolution request for a piece of property that is going to be developing in the downtown, so that's very good news. And so, you know, that would be in preparation to see something new built in the downtown. South of the River update on the grocer. The grocery store that we have been working with has notified us, and I think Bart forwarded that email to you, that he's waiting. He's put everything on hold for anything, of doing anything in the state of Illinois, because he's waiting to see what the state is going to do on some things that would affect his business. So I continue to be in touch with him and continue to look for other opportunities, but that is what he has notified us. North of the river, Sunny's here. We're going to talk about the hotel, Banquet Center, in a few moments, so it's very exciting. Kendall Marketplace, I continue to work with Alex. Actually, Christy, did you get the voicemail that I left you about what's going on with the retailers?
Yes.
So internally, what's going on is the other tenants at Kendall Marketplace are reviewing the new junior box and making sure that they meet all of the things that they want to see happen with the junior box. So they have a right, the other tenants in the shopping center have the ability to
veto,
and actually to the point of what the facade will be and everything. So this is not a city issue, this is the other co-tenants in the shopping center. So that's what it's out being done right now. So hopefully everybody's on the same page, though, and we'll get all that reviewed. And then I'm working with a developer to do an assemblage of property on Route 47 that has been moving along, and, you know, hopefully we're going to see a site that will have multi-tenant buildings, single-use buildings, and assemblage of a number of properties on Route 47, and also working with a developer doing a single-use on Route 34, east of 47. So some new things on the horizon north of the river. Industrial, you know, I left a message yesterday for Jeff Stevens and have not heard back from him, although I talked to Andy Hamilton today. And, you know, I would say it's very clear to me that they are landing in another town. So... And then Wrigley, you know, is continue to look at what's going on there, and I would anticipate that there's going to be some new activity at Wrigley in the near future as well. So that's a very positive thing. Gofford Sports, just want to report that we have officially got a groundbreaking ceremony that's going to be taking place on May 16th at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. That is a Tuesday. And it's kind of a family affair, so very much the kids involved in a photo op. So, and you will all be receiving an email with information on that, with an invitation, and I hope that everybody can attend that event.
When is that?
May 16th. It's a Tuesday at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So, and then also I am also working with Jordan Dorsey from Cedarhurst and Andy Black with Anthony Place to get groundbreaking set up for them. I know that Anthony Place is definitely interested in doing one. We're trying to figure out a date in June, so it probably will not be in the month of May. It'll probably be in the month of June. But he has the partners. People are traveling. There's weddings involved, and so they want to get a date where everybody can agree to be there. So as soon as I know, I will let you all know. But it will be in June for Anthony Place. Cedarhurst, I would actually maybe anticipate maybe July if they move forward with it. But, you know, everybody has a different appetite, so it's, you know, kind of just take the lead. So what the individual developer wants to do. Anthony Place definitely wants to do a groundbreaking, and I would anticipate being in June. And then Christy and I appeared on Fox Valley Headline Makers, and I think that went very well. I really enjoyed being with Christy on the show. And also, I attended the Kendall County Economic Development Committee meeting to discuss the Kendall County Revolving Loan Fund. So the county, I don't know if you're kind of, I'm sure you are up to speed on this, but the county has access to this revolving loan fund that they had to use a different set of parameters to dole it out to individual businesses, and now they have kind of a new strategy that they're trying to come up with so that it's going to make it easier for businesses to have access.
It was very tedious.
It was
someone through that process,
really,
and they're
really,
like, "This is
really it." Really wasn't practical, and so they're increasing the dollar amount. I think what they would like to do is $100,000 maximum to individual businesses. And you know, just to kind of develop a better user-friendly way. So we sat in a meeting, and they kind of picked the brains of the economic development professionals and the individual communities to kind of get our input. But it's the county board that's going to kind of be creating this new strategy. So I think it's wonderful. I think it's great. So because it's really intended for small businesses that need a small dollar amount, maybe for a build out or something like that, you know, and it's a anyway. And then I also attended the Conservation Foundation's Earth Day dinner, and that's basically all I have.
Any questions for Lynn?
Just one, you'll find more closing part. You guess which one I'm gonna ask?
No, actually.
The SSA at Kendall Marketplace.
Oh, this should have been my guess. The last conversation, did we talk about this here last month?
We've talked about the past few months.
Okay. And I don't remember what the update was at the time. Okay, so the latest that I've heard from the county is that they've missed the deadline for the property taxes such that the large portion of the townhome development within Kendall Marketplace is still going to get a property tax bill, which isn't a big deal as far as payment of the property taxes go, because they think that they'll be able to file a certificate of error and not have to pay the property taxes. So that's one issue, is that the property owner has been paying $100,000 in property taxes on this commercial entity that goes into the SSA that shouldn't have ever been. So that's like one issue, is money. And then the second issue is actually for the future development of the property is getting it removed. That, they've told me again that it should be available in short order, just not before property tax bills go out, you know, really any day now. So they've said that that would be another couple weeks before they'd be actually able to turn that around, and that will solve about 90% of the problem with the townhome lot within the development and removal of the SSA, which we've heard there are interested buyers that want to go out there and actually build in the townhome area, but they're refusing basically to sign a contract until the SSA is legally removed. So that's something that I've continued to express to them, and they've given me rolling deadlines since February and haven't met them yet. So
this has been it's been over 5 months since the issue was initially brought up. And then told month after month that it would take, you know, 30 days, another 30 days. And obviously it's on the county to do it. What leverage do we have to fix the Scrivener's error? Because, you know, as you mentioned, there was a interested developer. Obviously their timeline has lapsed.
But it fixed the month after the developer pulled out.
Right.
Right.
I'm not aware that we have any leverage. We've continued to express our displeasure with it and, you know, letting them know that they've basically delayed economic development in the area.
Who specifically are we talking
to? Talking to representatives of the Kendall County Clerk's Office, who have been the main point of contact, but the actual issue involved mapping GIS and the recorder's office to all verify these types of issues.
Okay. So multiple. Does Debbie Gillette know that this is going on?
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, has somebody spoken to her directly?
I have not spoken to her directly, no.
All right, well, I will be speaking
I'll call her as well. But Debbie Gillette's office, she is the one, her department's ultimately responsible for
this. Right. I mean, ultimately,
She's aware of the order? The error?
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. I've not talked to her.
It's all been at staff
directly.
Level?
Correct. Okay. Yes.
All right. Time to make phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
Agree.
I mean, this is costing quite a bit for us, potentially, with continued development loss. And for the owner.
Yeah, I mean, for all we know, Debbie doesn't even know about it.
But that would be
you
bad.
You make a phone call, she lights a fire under their butt, you know, to get this done. Done.
I'm a little surprised that it never went up to her.
It may have. I've not taken the issue to her particularly because I'm under the impression that the wheels have been turning with various departments to get the issue solved. Mm-hmm. It just hasn't been as high a priority for them as it has been for us.
Okay. That's nothing else. Item number 5, EDC 2017-31, small cell antennas.
Before you have two redlined ordinances, one amending Chapter 8, construction of utility facilities in the right-of-way, and one amending Chapter 18, telecommunication and antenna regulations. They're both being reviewed here. They will both be reviewed at Public Works Committee. And additionally, Chapter 18 will go on to planning PCC, Planning and Zoning Council, to have a public hearing for the text amendment. Because we will be amending the zoning code through this modification. As of late, the state of Illinois has seen a proliferation of small cell antenna applications submitted to municipalities as well as counties within the public rights-of-way and along private properties. So the Illinois Municipal League put out additional ordinance language for municipalities to take a look at and adopt based on our current ordinances. So what I've done is taken both chapters that deal with utility building within the private property as well as the public rights of ways, and modeled that language from the IML and inserted it into the ordinances as necessary. Our legal team has reviewed this as well. Since last year, we've received two applications. One was denied, and that was for a monopole, and that was denied last summer, I believe last July. There was an application that was reviewed and permitted, and that is for an antenna that connects to an existing pole that's already in place, and that will be that is going up shortly. I don't believe it's in place already. And this is to allow greater access and data for wireless users. I know that different states, I put in a couple of links to articles, are having a lot of problems with this. We are trying to be proactive in the state of Illinois and trying to outline exactly what we want to see as municipalities so that they're not popping up every 5 or so feet. So with the language we're comfortable with, if you have any comments or questions, I'd be happy to answer those or look into those further.
Well, under this language that's being proposed now, would the monopole that was denied have been approved?
No.
There were other issues with
it
that?
It would still be denied.
It would still be denied.
There were other issues with that.
Yeah, there were 3 or 4 different criteria we used at the time to deny it that are general and aesthetic in nature. Mm-hmm. Those would still remain in this ordinance, and then additionally, it would prohibit generally above ground monopoles. So if there's an existing utility pole, you can attach to it, but generally,
this ordinance would prohibit above ground.
Yes,
there were like height parameters about.
Correct. There are parameters in there that deal with private property and within the right of way. So it's an overlapping. Okay. Zoning ordinance issue and right-of-way construction ordinance. So if there's a reason to approve a new monopole, there are very strict criteria, mm-hmm. and generally I believe it has to be in substitution for an existing pole.
Correct.
Yeah. So our ordinance is generally set up not to allow above-ground utilities in general for new construction. So that's handled from that aspect of it. So this would generally just be where there are existing above-ground facilities that can be replaced.
Okay.
This doesn't preclude the towers like the one that was proposed over on Eldemain, the large tower. These are all small, as what they proposed in front of City Hall.
Correct. There wouldn't be any change to the Eldemain-type towers because those are located on private property, so it'd be your normal special use process.
Yeah. Yeah, that goes through. That's not this loophole,
nope,
which would have allowed them to be placed virtually anywhere they wanted.
Yeah.
But this ordinance would allow them to attach it to existing poles.
Correct.
Yes. Correct.
So they couldn't add a pole, but they could attach the utility to an existing pole.
As long as it's within a certain height and a certain distance, and it matches aesthetically with the current.
No more than 10 feet above the top and all that. Yeah. That was in there.
And also, there's certain restrictions for distance from a residential or commercial building and other things like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. And this is private and?
Private and it deals public. With both. Yeah, that's why there's two ordinances.
Well, it's limited to 7 square feet. A Volkswagen is a little bigger than 7 square feet.
You'd be amazed.
Hey, I'm from Berwyn. They put 9 cars in a spindle.
You'd be amazed. One of the replacements they sent us, there was on Water Tower. The thing's very compact, and the net weight was like 985 pounds.
Yeah.
The hardware was some high tech alloy. They're like, this alloy hardware, I'm like, I gotta need specs on that. I don't know what that is.
Yeah.
So
what would happen if the schools wanted to do something? Because we went through with the
Are they going to attach it on top to their windows?
Generator.
So these ordinance amendments would not address on-building antennas, which are part of the building code, or private property related antenna requests. This is strictly to address issues of cell phone companies, basically, wanting to put antennas and monopoles within the right of way. So it's just because antennas are referenced throughout the zoning code and the building code, we had to amend those sections of our city code that reference those in order to address the right-of-way issue. Oh, it's needlessly complex.
It is.
It sounds bad, and it is bad.
They can attach a utility to it, but they can't add a new one.
Right.
Correct.
No. That, I could have sworn when we were on park board that we thought about poles being, Wi-Fi being put in the parks.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you would need to have some type of antenna system.
Sure, and this would not address that.
No.
Yeah, you'd still have to get siting level permit if it's going to be within private property.
Now, the private property part of these, in the older part of town, we have some power poles, utility poles that run through the older areas.
Sure.
These will still be permitted, even though they're not in a public right-of-way, they're in an easement, but those, they could still attach the antenna to it, as long as it meets the criteria.
Yeah, we would look at the different siting and permit.
Make sure that they're sited correctly, but they theoretically could put one in those residential areas.
Yeah. Really, the biggest issue with all of this was the monopole situation, which was right in front of City Hall, and they're doing that really throughout the Chicagoland region, where they're just coming in, they're seeing if they can get a permit, they're erecting the pole, and then, then it's there. Mm-hmm. So. And sometimes they don't even apply for the permit. I saw a news report out of, I think, Utah or Nevada. Somebody just installed, 100-foot-tall monopole next to a highway, and they didn't get a permit for it, so nobody has an idea, who actually installed it. So that was their big story, was trying to figure out who installed this massive monopole.
Cut it down, whoever shows up.
Somebody
will show up, and that's who put it up.
Yeah.
I had a contractor once that was having problems with ComEd coming to relocate a pole. Just back the D9 into it, and we'll see how quick they get there.
Yeah.
They got there next day. So these are the existing poles?
Generally.
Generally. Utility company, ComEd comes through, they replace poles all the time.
Yes.
Obviously the poles have multiple users on them.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Phone company wants to come in, they install new poles.
Yep.
Without permit. Technically it's their easement, their rights to put them in there. They just come in and throughout the city place 10 new poles.
Well, they have franchise agreements with us that govern construction within the right-of-way. They have ICC permit regulations where
obviously
they may not have to.
That.
Correct. But these are companies that are operating outside of franchise authority
outside
and ICC authority.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So then we're covered. The franchisees are good. They're not.
Yeah.
They've reached their agreement with
New regulations on existing utilities generally. It's just basically cell phone companies and the construction of new above ground utilities. Okay.
The ones we don't have those agreements to cover us.
Yep.
Okay.
Because they're not viewed by Illinois as an essential utility. And that's what's being committed to right of what is essential utilities, gas. So
in the two IDOT projects, 34 and then I know 71 at some point, they're going to move poles in the 71, right? So there'll be, and then we're, I was understanding we're responsible for the right of way then, right?
For maintaining the right of way generally, yes.
Right, so does that mean those, does that, how is that going to play out if they go to the IDOT and say we want to attach to one of these poles?
So utility poles generally have no bearing on our municipal maintenance responsibilities. So we usually do not take over anything having to do with wires or poles if they're there. Streetlights, yes. You know, if there's like a city streetlight there that's attached to a ComEd pole, there are those. But in general, we will never have to worry about electric utilities, cable utilities, phone utilities, as far as our maintenance goes.
But if they wanted to attach to one of the poles in the right way on 71, they would be within our jurisdiction.
They would have to permit it.
They'd have to come through.
Correct. Correct. That's what I was asking about.
That's what I thought.
They can't circumvent the city and go straight to ComEd and say, can we put it up?
But they do have to have their permission.
Yes. So it's actually dual authority.
But they can't circumvent us.
No.
What I'm saying.
Right.
That's what I was trying to
ComEd. Correct.
State highway lands, they still have to come to us for a permit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. That's where you're going.
Yep. That's where I was.
And ComEd has for state permit. All
right. Yeah, no, I didn't have any problem looking at it. Okay. So.
It's complicated, but...
So what do we want to do with this one, then? It sounds like we're in
But we don't do anything.
Right, it's just informational, because it'll still go to public works
so
and then a PCC for a public hearing.
Before we have to worry about it.
So you'll probably see it in late June or early July at City Council.
Item number 6, EDC 2017-32, text amendment orders to zoning board.
Right, this will be slightly less complicated than small cell antennas. So this is just a cleanup within our zoning ordinance. A couple years ago, CrossFit was coming in and they wanted to build in an M1 district, and we had a health club and gymnasium use in our table. So a fitness club was added to the zoning ordinance, a line was given, and it was just permitted in M1. Whereas health clubs and gymnasiums were allowed in B2, B3, and B4. Recently, we were getting some commercial permits for, you know, a yoga studio or other physical fitness types of uses, and neither of these had a definition in our zoning ordinance. So what's a fitness club? What's a health club? What's the difference? So for the most part, staff is recommending we added a definition and combine both of these to be allowed in B2, B3, B4, and M1. Because we felt that health clubs, fitness clubs, all these types of uses are very similar. There's not a big difference between a CrossFit studio and an actual gym with memberships and things like that. So we are just looking for feedback on the proposed definition and also where it's permitted uses. I will clarify too, we already permit CrossFit in the B's, in the commercial uses, and vice versa with the M1. This is really just making it clearer for everybody. If you're looking up this as a future business owner, to know, like, oh, this is what I'm trying to do, it's allowed in these places.
Yeah, I didn't even realize there was a difference previously, so.
This is the original intent of what was presented the last time. It just, in translation and putting it into the actual code, they created a separate line, the codifiers, and instead of combining it. And so we ran into this issue, and it just was better to clean it up.
Well, what if, like, because some gyms and yoga studios and different things like that have massage services too. So is that an issue? Because I don't know. I just remember there being something with massage studios.
We have a separate massage license.
So that they'd be okay as long as that part of it was satisfied.
If the primary use was a gym, it would fall primarily into a gym. But when they do incorporate a massage, they would have to get a license from the clerk's office for that.
That's in the definition, too, incidental uses, because you could have child care facilities or things like that in some gyms. That would be part of the definition. That would be okay to get a massage license.
Right.
Okay.
I don't mind the definition change. I don't like the permitted use of the fitness and gyms and the manufacturing use. The others are all fine, but the manufacturing is supposed to be manufacturing, not a gym. So I don't support that change as a permitted use. If it were special use on a case-by-case, depending on the intensity of the use, what type of use, that'd be one thing, but not as a permitted. I don't support it.
Well, I don't know, because I've been in some of these gyms from time to time, and they're like...
Industrial.
Like they're carrying tires around. Mm-hmm.
That's why I said
it's not like a clean, nice, like gym. Yeah, but why make them pay like extra money just to do fitness? I don't agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, a yoga studio is a little different than a CrossFit in terms of their intensity. I just don't think that it's appropriate. I mean, manufacturing, industrial, that is a specific type of a use. Well-defined business is business. There's a clear divide between them, and we are starting to get a blend in our manufacturing districts, which I understand we're trying to fill spaces, but is it appropriate? Well, when we have users that want it manufacturing and they're filled with businesses that are yoga studios, yeah, it's not the best thing, I don't think, but that's my opinion.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I see Chris's point. I don't think I feel as strongly about it as Chris does. I can see, but I mean, at this point, I mean, we have, and I understand they went through the special use, but we have, you know, CrossFits in manufacturing districts, and I don't think we've had
one left.
There were two, right?
There's one left.
Okay.
What we've seen from a staff level is a lot of communities in the area and outside of the area have struggled to fill their manufacturing space. And the
right.
manufacturers have come to us with potential lessees and saying, you know, I need to fill my space in order to be able to stay, you know, afloat on my mortgage. And nothing that fits this category is coming my way. But here's something that is going to fit. It works for my building size and what I have available, and this will get me through. And we felt that the process of a special use has become a little onerous to property owners, especially in the manufacturing district, especially if they expend all this time and money to go through the process and then not get it, or the tenant doesn't stick around for the completion.
Right.
You see businesses tending to model themselves in an industrial kind of format. So you have physical therapy companies model themselves in a large industrial setting. And they're in, you know, Naperville, they have a lot of them. You have commercial, like Gym Quest or studios, dance studios, model themselves in the physicality of a industrial use. So,
especially like those jump zones.
Exactly, jump zones. So
right.
They're not looking for retail space. They're looking
right.
for large industrial space where, you know, there's going to be a lot of noise, and being in an inline situation is not...
Something like that, under this ordinance, the way you're proposing it, if a...
Yes.
Sky zone wanted
That's
to come
exactly
in.
That's exactly what we were
they
looking
could go
at.
To manufacturer.
Yes, that they can go into manufacturing and not have to come through us through the special use process. Because our neighbors are not putting into a special use process.
Right.
It does seem like the majority of the CrossFit applications, they don't require that much square foot under roof. They're for CrossFit, they only have 2,200 square feet. It's the problem is that they cater to a select clientele and they charge $100 to $150 a month. And they have maybe 40 members, so the $12 to $22 a square foot on a business zoning is impossible for them to afford at that level. That's exactly what the lady from Yorkville CrossFit was telling me. Bare Bones is a little bit larger, but...
Yorkville is the one in the strip mall by Legends, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right. No, that's...
No, it's on the other side.
That's on a commercial drive.
Commercial.
And those units,
oh.
that while they are
okay.
they are manufacturing... They're very small units. So, for example, one of the tenants in there is the local NRA rep that rents the space there. He predominantly uses that to reload his own ammunition and whatever else, and that's manufacturing. And he has a business and he's licensed by that. You know,
right.
He got everything, but it's small users like that. Very, they don't seem to want the gigantic. We're not going to see them in the very large manufacturing facilities we have over in the industrial park, I don't think.
Lynn, what would you say is the average square foot price for commercial as compared to industrial for a lease?
Well, it's all over, but I can tell you one thing, that there's a substantial difference in the price from the commercial to the industrial. Because you could be $12, you could be $23 a foot for commercial, depending upon if you're looking to go in line to Kendall Marketplace. I mean, because it's a big variety, whole big gamut that it could run. But if you are like a gymnastics place or something like that, and you need a very big space to be able to provide the service that you provide to the, to your customers, you could, there's no way you can afford to do that in a commercial inline space. Right. You're going to be looking, if you look even, like you say, in Naperville and Oswego, you know, an interesting place to go and drive by is in Naperville, kind of by the car dealerships. Mm-hmm. There's a big industrial park back there. Mm-hmm. And if you go back there, there's like, there's Jump Zone, but then there's like gymnastics this, and there's a swim thing. And right. That's really what all these businesses are really doing. They're looking to be in an environment like that, and they like to be by each other, and it's like little families with little kids, and they're all in there, and they're just doing their thing, and because it gives them kind of the platform of what they need to do, and they can pay $5 a foot or $6 a foot.
Yeah. So it'd be interesting to know that use, the one over Naperville, I know where that's at. Mm-hmm. Are they a permitted use or are they special use? That'd be interesting to know for those users. Secondly, there is a huge difference, generally speaking, from the price per square foot of a commercial user to an industrial. The users you talk about, you know, the gymnastics where they need 20,000 square feet to be able to provide. I'm surprised that they can't afford that, knowing the costs of gymnastics. It's not cheap entry fees for those types of users. But then again, it's a lot of square foot for a small class. But the issue for me is some of these smaller users, if we're talking about a yoga studio or something like that, they could go into a commercial use. They don't need high vault ceilings or anything like that there. But what they're looking at is a cheaper price per square foot. So we are somewhat subsidizing the availability for some of those users that don't want to pay an actual business for commercial square footage. They're going to pay for an industrial.
Well, we're not subsidizing.
I should take them back, but we are facilitating them to not utilize our commercial and go to the industrial, which is intended for a different use. So the business, yes, it's more expensive, and there are proper users that should be using that. Granted, the prices are more difficult to sustain. I get that.
Right.
But at some point, what do you determine who's going to win, who's going to lose there?
How much industrial business do we have coming to us looking for spots?
We have one industrial user that's constantly contacting me because he needs a lessee, and if this is a permit.
No, I mean, how many industrial uses do we have asking us, where's your industrial park? How many, you know, can I get in here? I can't even imagine that it's that many. I imagine, yeah, well, if one comes in and one, you know, there's nothing available, well, I can't, how many empty buildings are there currently, industrially?
I don't know.
Any idea?
Well, I can tell you this. There are sometimes, I will get information that there may be an industrial user looking for 150,000 square foot existing building to come and do da 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 da. We have nothing like that in our inventory. Okay, they're kind of like smaller buildings that are divided up by multiple tenants.
Right.
So you know, it is what it is. It's a quandary. When I get someone that says the DCEO will send out an email blast and they'll say we have someone looking for this, and it's like a monster building, okay?
Yeah.
And so I have nothing that I can respond and say, oh, I've got one, you know, here's our information. So there is really not that often that someone comes and says, I'm looking for a small industrial
use.
So, you know, and the big ones are ones that they are kind of going through DCEO saying, you know, to everybody in the state of Illinois, who's got this, you know, yeah. And that is what it is. So, I mean, does that answer your question?
Well, I guess I'm just saying it. I just don't feel like there's manufacturing beating down our door to get into one of these buildings. I mean, is this right? Are they
yeah,
like,
there's not anybody that I have that I'm working with looking for a space right now.
My point is, I don't think it's that big of a deal. I don't think we have people beating down our doors trying to find an industrial space, and we have spaces available, and people are looking for spaces to rent. So why do we have a problem?
That's the problem, because it's a difference of use. It's very clear. Industrial is not the same as business. If we want it to be, then create a combined business and industrial use, set it across the platform. The reason it's separated is because there's a distinct difference between the two types of uses. That's why we have zoning classifications.
That's it. Well, I guess.
So,
well, we're not allowing this in the most intensive
manufacturing.
This is only limited. This is for limited manufacturing from the M1 district.
Our industrial park, you know, Fox Industrial Park, was made at a time when it was a lot of mom and pops and smaller buildings that came along. There's not a big anchor in there or anything like that. You know, it's certainly different than
I've seen some of those manufacturing spots.
If you've ever been inside Caterpillar's Manufacturing Center, you could fit four of Wrigley's in just building each over there.
Right.
I worked right at high school.
Well, I don't have a problem with this. I just think that we're
putting for the last time, I agree with Diane.
The last time.
How do you know?
Trust me. There might be
something else today.
I doubt it.
Yeah, I just don't think it's a big deal. I think if people have a business and they need, I mean, I don't know, we're all supposed to be business friendly, right? We're supposed to be helping our businesses. So if they can find a spot that's good for them to use and it works and they can get it for a lesser price, well, then go for it. I don't have...
I think a lot of times these guys have buildings in there and they may section it up into three pieces, because I know our baseball team uses a third of the warehouse.
I've seen some of these. They're not that big.
A couple batting cages
right.
and stuff.
Yeah. And I think smaller manufacturing areas like we have, we're not an industrial town.
No.
Yorkville's not an industrial town. And you see a lot more things going the way of manufacturing buildings. The batting cages, mm-hmm. the sport fitness place, the speed camps, the mm-hmm. jump zones. They want those big industrial, you know, and that we can accommodate. We can't accommodate the 150,000
right.
square foot
that's
ready
right.
to
that's
go building.
Lack.
So I think, you know, you use what you have. Mm-hmm. And I think this would be a good way to use what we have. So let's give it a try.
Yeah.
Over Alderman Funkhauser's objection.
Do you just want to leave it on, don't put it on consent, and then you can...
This goes to
PBZ. Okay,
yeah,
the zoning first. All right. I thought instead of wanting to prove it.
I don't know. Anyway, I won't be there. No.
Okay.
Well, I do care. Yeah, why are you even here today, Diane?
Nothing else. EDC, item number 7, EDC 2017-33 Hotel Incentive Agreement.
Okay, there's a draft incentive agreement in your packet for Kendall Hospitality LLC. This is Mr. Sonny Shaw, who's here, in case you want to ask him any questions about his wonderful hotel and banquet facility. I've got a complicated diagram on the board of the financials. Generally just presents the numbers in a different format. That's what's in the memo. So if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to walk them through it. Probably the most important thing is the bottom, which is purple, and that's the actual TIF deal. And kind of going through just both the individual decision-making basis for the TIF incentive, but then also the ongoing structural deficit of the Countryside TIF fund. So just as a snapshot, on the far right, in the lower right-hand corner, you know, we're about $500,000 in ongoing deficit in the fund related to our past TIF deals from 2006. And the teardown of the buildings, and then the recession. And if nothing else occurs, basically, including the hotel, in the next 11 fiscal years, that we would expect that ongoing structural deficit to be about $1.6 million Just based on the debt issuances that we had from 2005, some of our financings we've done, and some of the other TIF deals that we've done. So that assumes no growth on current properties, which means, you know, you're going to see some growth there. No hotel, which we're talking about today, obviously. And then the remaining 2.5 outlots, one of which is under construction and two which are vacant. So in general, just to kind of give you an idea of the long-term viability of the fund, if we have 3 more Lighthouse Academy-type buildings go in and nothing else, the fund should be right side up by fiscal year 2029, which is when the TIF closes. If we have the hotel and you get 1.5 Lighthouse buildings on the remaining 3 lots, which I think is actually a fairly good estimate that we've heard, you know, there's probably going to be new restaurants that would go up as a result of the construction of the hotel, then the TIF fund should be okay. So on a long-term basis, this shouldn't make it worse, and in fact, it should accelerate the development of the remaining lots, although that is not a guarantee or a component of this deal. From an individual deal-making basis, $700,000 at opening of the hotel and banquet facility, which is similar to what we did for the movie theater. So that gives you 9 or 10 years probably of property tax generation. The numbers are above as to how I got there. So, you know, maybe $1 million, $1.5 million of total TIF revenue that would be generated just from this individual parcel over a 9 or 10 year period. So compare that to a $700,000 TIF incentive. I actually think the city will come out ahead by the end of the TIF fund. So, which is good news because then that helps us offset our ongoing structural deficit. So the actual commitment within the agreement is fairly general. 4 stories, 80 hotel rooms. He's actually planning for 90, and a 12,000 square foot minimum banquet center. There wasn't anything that we could qualify in there with aesthetics as a minimum standard. You know, the property is going to be subject to all of our normal commercial aesthetic standards, and so we didn't feel the need to make the agreement more complicated, unless if you wish, certainly. There are a number of details about the project, elevation, actual brand, that normally we might get into on another deal, but we didn't think that they were necessary here just because of the past history and reputation of the developer and the general size of the incentive commitment going forward. So if anybody has any questions, I'm happy to take them.
Go ahead, Carl.
Well, I know there's still some negotiations going on with the hotel chain, whatever it's going to be and all that, and that'll come eventually, but let's say that falls apart. Is there like a date by which we need to start building, or the incentive goes away? What's that?
Yeah.
I figured there was. I just can't remember what the date was.
The commitment is that I believe the property has to be taken over by July 31st of this year.
As far as ownership.
Yes, and then commencing construction by January 1st of 2018, so another 6 months from now. So a fairly quick turnaround, actually, which I don't know that it would be a big deal if we had to delay that. And then actually under most of the chain's standards for construction, it's a 2-year timeline for construction. But the construction could take as short as a year if everything goes correctly. So we put a 2-year standard in there, but we would actually anticipate for purposes of the incentive agreement that the property would be completed and operational in about 12 to 15 months.
Okay. Chris?
I know when we did the Dunkin' Donuts on the south side, they missed several key timelines on there, and it was just generally extended, no consequence to them. They still received their incentives. Didn't sit well really with me. I know there were some outstanding issues that created that, but then it was just some slow timing on their part. Aside from just canceling out the agreement if they fail to comply with the dates on here, what else do we have to work with them? I don't want this to be something that we don't give them the incentive because
it's a
huge thing to make this work for them.
Yeah, so the Dunkin' Donuts incentives, from what I can remember, was under the force majeure clause in the actual agreement with Kathy, which Kathy reviewed based on their narrative. So she felt that that complied. That's a standard, legal section of any of our agreements. It's in this one, too. But for something you know, really unexpected and out of their control occurring, they would actually have to come back to us to extend those timings. So on the opposite side, I believe it was the theater project or one of the other countryside projects, it actually missed an interior deadline and then needed a restructure of the actual incentive and came back to us, and City Council had reviewed that at the time and approved it. So we have had it happen both ways, and we've also had some projects like Wrigley that have met all their timelines and received the incentives without a problem. So, you know, we've been tried to be flexible within the context of the agreement, but also making sure that the, you know, the important metrics are met within the agreement.
Okay. So anything, if they do miss it, we'll have those discussions, whether it needs to be amended by council or if it's something.
Correct.
Staff will let me address. Yep. So.
Okay.
No.
Nothing. Yeah, the only thing I would mention, this would be more for Lynn. I know that the two lots that are left, a lot of people with the theater being there are looking for like a Chili's, a Friday's, some type of that kind of thing. That would probably go good with the hotel too, I'm guessing.
Absolutely.
You know, I'd be worried if you told me that three more of the
daycare centers
popped in there.
No.
That would just scare the crap out of me.
I think what Bart was referring to, that was like the value of it, not the use.
Well, that's what I'm getting at. That would scare me.
Sorry about the value of it. Not, yes. I don't want to put words in your mouth, yes. But I think that's where you were going.
So
certainly, and actually, we've been working with some restaurants that have actually said, if you go get this, come and let us know.
Yeah, so, because it's going to be catered business, right?
Is
it going to be catered, like the banquet's going to be catered, or are they cooking on site?
They're cooking on site.
Oh, okay.
No. We have other restaurateurs that have said to us, if you go and get a hotel on this site, come and let us know, because then we are interested in doing a restaurant. So it was just getting through this so that now, once we get through all this, we can go back and say, guess what? We got it, and it's going to be a...
And don't forget, too, the other hurdles they threw before us have already been rectified. The streets and countryside and the signage on 34 and 47.
Yes.
So those two have gone up. Yes. The streets have been fixed. We're in the hotel.
Yes.
I mean, we're laying the groundwork for these people to now say, okay, you checked off the boxes.
Right. Correct. Let's Yes.
You make a lot of people happy to do that.
Okay, so that is, I can assure you that it is really the desire by everyone to see within the next year. I can't make any commitments because, again, it's other factors that are deciding, but certainly with everyone's desire to see those other lots under contract within the next year. So, okay.
Chris?
Yeah, two. So we're set to approve the development agreement. Do we have any controls or rights as a council on the site plan approval or the other tenants that are going to go into the property?
We didn't propose any as part of the development agreement simply because the property is zoned and went through a PUD, and we wouldn't expect that anything that would be proposed with the hotel would violate any of the construction standards, building or zoning code. Within the city. So just our normal base level aesthetic and you know, construction standards.
So the only thing we're going to see is that sketch plan right there that's not actually been submitted to us?
Correct.
Okay.
And this is a concept.
I get that. I'm just looking at one item there, the, you know, traffic going through on the streets. You've got parallel parking on a 36-foot, or might be 39-foot back-to-back curb. That's awful narrow traffic right there. Those kind of things, I understand staff will look at it, but candidly, staff looks at things that are not always in the same eye as what we're looking at. So I appreciate your review on those, but I do like the idea of having a look at it before it's final approved, which I know our process does not provide that, but I just want to make sure that what goes in is a good project. And right now, all we're seeing is a sketch, black and white. We're not seeing anything of what's really going to be put in there. Sometimes it does concern me that we don't have a, say, we don't have a look at what's actually going in. Not that it's going to be a bad product, not that it's going to be a bad plan, but sometimes I just like the cursory see, the review, maybe input. That's all.
Was there something else, too?
No, it was...
No.
actually look at, you know, the okay. users and then the site plan, you know, the actual proposal.
Are the buildings connected?
No, it's not.
It's not connected.
Okay. It would be nice to have a causeway between the two at least.
I thought that was going to be.
There will be
some type of causeway.
Yes.
Okay. Because, I mean, this is Illinois.
Yes. We talked about that in depth.
Right. If you're going from a hotel to the banquet facility, you've got the 13 and a half corridor.
The intention of that was merely to give you an idea that this is the footprint of the hotel and how the buildings could be, you know, on the site. And, you know, Sunny certainly is going to be meeting all of the city's appearance codes. And then when he works out the deal to get his national flag, you know, they have prototypes as well. So he has to meet, you know, what it might look like that, you know, and you can drive on the highway and you could identify a hotel by the way it looks if you drive down the highway enough, you could say, oh, that's a that or that's a this, and then right. he has to meet that as well, so.
Right. I do this stuff for a living. This is the most lax development agreement I have dealt with in 10 years. And, it's a good thing because it's very, very developer-friendly. It is the most developer-friendly agreement that I've seen for a, you know, $8 and $2 million project.
Well, are there provisions in there that you would like to see that you're concerned about? Or?
Well, the theater agreement was actually modeled off of this, so that was right. approved within the past 3 years and had similar standards. So that one, I don't even know that there was a minimum square footage. I think it was just a general description.
But
of the
time, we saw plans, we saw the site plan, we saw elevations. We did actually see and have some feedback on the actual...
Because it was a PUD
plan.
Process.
It was a PUD.
Sure, okay.
It was a major amendment.
Fair point.
So this is not, this is a...
Straight zoning.
Mm-hmm. Because it's already a PUD, but we're not seeing anything on one of the largest developments that we have in recent years next to Wrigley.
From a legal standpoint, if it's straight zoning...
That's
straight zoning.
Yeah.
I mean, if he needs a variance or something, then we can look at it, but if it's straight zoning...
There's nothing you can assert.
We already laid down.
He's asking for
that's what we can do.
He's asking for a $700,000 development agreement. I would like to see what's being proposed. It doesn't mean that we have any right to it, and that's one thing that I think we as a council have given up is our right to review on some of these proposals. But
when it's straight zoning, sure.
Yeah.
I mean, we set
but this
the
does
rules.
Fall under this is under a PUD project. So, it's just something I, for myself, it's a little concerning because it is such a large project. It's a key project for our
Well, so I mean, what would you like to see happen? Are you mentioning just to register your objection, or is there something you would like to see? Because, I mean, if it's straight zoning, it's straight zoning. So, I mean, is there something you would like to do or see? Or
I mean, I'd like to see the site plan and architectural elevations prior to final approval. In order to...
Of what?
For incentive or for the actual building permits and things like that?
Final approval of what? I guess it's better to understand.
Before final approval of site plan and architecture. The incentive agreement as drafted is vague and basic as it is.
Right.
You know.
Well, my point is, I don't think we have the legal authority to...
So you're getting into the role of an elected board versus staff in the construction and development processes. Okay, there are municipalities throughout the state, but I trust Chris's assessment of that, that will review building permit, aesthetic issues, architectural review committee, before really even building permits are issued. Regardless of whether there's a variance, being issued or not, even if it's straight zoning. And so you have the authority to direct the structure and processes by which building permits and zoning, projects are issued and commenced. And so that's something that's really a high-level discussion at the board level for how you guys want to set up, your own development review processes. In most towns, I would venture to say that it's very similar to ours, where once something is straight zoning and it's building code related and you've got aesthetic standards, that the removal of the elected board from the process makes things a little bit more efficient from a timeline, and then you put the role of executing the policies in the hands of professionals. But there are other communities that say, no, there are properties that are so few and so important to us that we don't necessarily care that we've got these processes. We want to review it. So, you know, what Chris is asking for in exchange in the context of an incentive agreement isn't unnormal. There are communities that say, if we're going to give you an incentive, it's going to be way above and beyond our existing aesthetic standards. It's just not something that we've usually done, but it's a policy decision for the city council. So we haven't had any issues that I've been aware of, but for maybe the objection to the color of the hotel. When that got considered, the theater, when it got constructed. That's the one. That have really got down to a core of, like, you know, this building is ugly, or it just doesn't meet what our vision for the community is in my, 12 or 13 years here. There's been some development agreements that have been a little bit more strict, than what we're trying to do here. There's also been some that have been for a lot higher dollar amount, too. So it's a policy decision for the city council.
It's not that I don't want this to go through, because I do. The incentive agreement, I would appreciate the ability to have a look at the plans, even if it's cursory, before they're approved. The incentive agreement, I think it's a fair agreement. We don't require architecture to be submitted for this level. That's not a requirement of our process. So, it's one of those, if the developers are willing to do it, they do it. They don't have an obligation to. Mm-hmm. But sometimes we forego that aesthetic and a review. Now, aesthetics are aesthetics. We looked at the renderings of the theater, looked great, came out purple, it still works. That is truly an aesthetic issue.
And I think why I'm more comfortable with this is for the mere fact that it's, whatever national chain they go with, it's a national chain. The aesthetics are going to look like a Holiday Inn,
yeah,
or a Red Roof Inn, or, name a hotel, a Hilton, or whatever the heck it is.
Suites.
You're going to drive by, and it's going to look like the brand. It's not like it's an independent, Sonny's Hotel.
Sonny's Hotel.
A big plastic sun on top of that.
Obviously, if they wanted to do four-sided signage on the building, technically that would be permitted by ordinance, because we have the signage that's permitted on all sides. Now, they'd have to further that by meeting the cutoffs of the lighting on the building, because obviously if it's on the north side, that fronts and faces towards the residential.
Right.
However, with one of the issues I brought up in the past is LED lighting. That's a different metric of measuring a different type of lighting that doesn't cut off as well as your traditional lights. So, four-sided signage, obviously that's something for staff to make certain that if it's done, it's not a problem for the residents. Because, it's a four-story building, it's one of the bigger ones. There are those kind of things to think about as to what's going through and what's going to be put into it.
Okay, I think we're 3-0 as far as incentives, so what's the next thing you want?
Well, the agreement itself has to be approved by City Council. It doesn't require any public hearings or anything. And I know that the developer is looking to move on the project. So
can we do it Tuesday?
Yeah.
This Tuesday?
The agreement, as far as I'm concerned, is ready to be approved, but for any objections to the contents. So that can be moved to Tuesday.
Okay. And it probably should be for the, don't put on a cent, should be for everybody to vote on, right? Because it's an incentive.
It can go on consent, but the committee doesn't want to discuss it further.
Chris, ultimately, Chris will pull it or not. not to be funny, but do you want it on the general, or do you want it on the
incentive? Your initial instinct was to go on to regular agenda.
It
could go either way.
Okay, yeah, that's what I think. It's instead everybody should be on board with it. So
yeah,
or you know have options.
Well, yeah, consent a lot of times people don't read it.
Yeah, I know.
I read it.
You read every one of those public works items go through.
I voted no.
You voted no.
Plenty of time.
Okay. No issues with that, then. Item 8, EDC 2017-34, Downtown TIF Extension.
All right. I'll quickly go over the memo part. Feel free to jump in at any time with added explanation. Over the course of the past few months, staff has been reviewing the healthiness of the downtown TIF. Evaluating an extension, if that's going to be good enough, or if we need to come up with a different solution to make sure it's helping and assisting in downtown redevelopment. And in the memo, we went through all the properties within the existing TIF downtown, saw which ones had positive EAVs since the base was set in 2006, and which ones have gone negative. And after reviewing, we found out that a lot of the main properties for redevelopment were having negative EAVs. Now, taxes have gone up, but since those EAVs haven't gone up, the increment isn't generated for those properties. So we talked with city attorney, Bart, Nicole, all of community development, Aaron. We all kind of discussed the best option, and it would be to split the existing TIF, create a new boundary which has some of the properties that aren't expected to generate a lot of TIF over time, and create a new TIF district that will most likely generate more increment. Now, when you split two TIF districts, if the boundaries touch, you can share the funds. So that's a big thing, saying, hey, we're going to kind of put these guys in this corner, and these are going to really drive that.
So basically,
increment.
The positive properties are going to be subsidizing the negative properties. We'll be transferring funds over to try to help the weaker TIF. It's basically what we're...
Yes, but the whole purpose of having the two TIFs would be to put as many of the negative properties in the second TIF. That way, it resets the value, so it erases the negative equity.
There would be two new TIFs. We would be getting rid of our current TIF.
One old and hopefully extended TIF.
So you're amending the geographic boundary, though, of the existing.
Correct.
Yeah, you'd be
and then applying for an extension.
So it's a multiple part. You're going to
remove properties.
Remove
you can't
properties.
Add.
We cannot add to it. So when we're looking at this, we're looking at the blue. Exhibit B is the old, correct?
Yeah.
That's going to be the start. We're going to take the original, that's going to be the blue, pull areas out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Extend that to another 23 years. And those are...
Additional 12
sorry,
years.
10. It's a reset to...
12.
Yeah, it's a reset. Because we have a statutory limit on that.
That's for the blue one.
Yep.
And then the secondary, we're going to create a new...
Mm-hmm.
With those parcels pulled out, and some new parcels.
Yes.
And that'll have a full 23-year term. Okay.
So the extension process is the old process that we talked about, where we have to make the business case to each one of the taxing entities and say, would you give us a letter of support or just stay neutral for a sole purpose TIF extension bill at the state level. And usually the legislators are okay with extending it as long as all the rest of the taxing entities are. So I've verbally briefed a couple of them informally at the Joint Review Board meeting and just said the entire premises behind this is in 2006 we thought that we would have $35 million of total investment. If you take taxes on that after you put it into an EAV calculation, it's millions of dollars in new taxes over a 20-year period after this thing closes. You know, that would benefit the taxing entities. You know, if we cut this thing down now and just say this just isn't working as it is because of the recession, you know, I think the school district is the biggest beneficiary of like $30,000 of new revenue annually, which is nothing. So, you know, you make the business case to them that we think that we can do this over a 23-year period now that properties are going up in value and that we need police support. And then the second is going through the entire study process again. Housing study, TIF study, come up with a new plan for the second TIF, and then mail notices to all the property owners, explain to them why we're not raising their property taxes. If anybody remembers that process from, no one here was here in 2006 when we did it. I think I was the only one. Talk to the residents about what TIF is and what it isn't. But ultimately, the decision to create a new TIF is at the board's discretion. So the city council would have a joint review board at the time that would made up of all the taxing entities and a resident. They would review the plan, and they could vote it down if the taxing entities didn't like it. But all that does is change the voting threshold for the city council when it actually gets approved. So that process is controllable by the city if you absolutely think this is a really good idea. But that process is, 6 months, 9 months between the housing study, the public outreach, convincing everybody that it's, an acceptable economic development initiative, and then actually creating it. So one of the things that we didn't mention in the memo that in my mind would be a good carrot for a lot of the residential properties that we're going to end up pulling in is this is older housing stock in the city, and some of it is dilapidated. So regardless of whether the individual property meets like property maintenance issue criteria, you could create a facade improvement program, like I think Nicole had mentioned in the last budget proposal last year, that would be solely for residential development. So if nothing else, you could say,
the boundaries of the TIF.
Yeah, in the interim, we can basically put up a facade improvement program. If you want to do something to your house, we can give you 80% or 50% of it, and then that would actually increase their property value, which then benefits everybody else too. So there are things that are non-traditional. It's not resulting in a new mixed-use building on their houses, but you could at least offer them to say, this is a program that we would create as part of it that would then go around and in turn help us promote commercial development in the area. So the purpose of this is just to give everybody a status update. We're still really compiling data before we say, okay, it's time to go to do the public outreach to the other taxing entities, to commit to doing, the full 5 to 6 month study. But we want to make sure everybody is okay with the process still, and, you're still telling us to move forward.
In terms of the process, too, we were planning on doing it in-house. I worked for a planning consultant for 3 years, set these up in a lot of different communities throughout Illinois. So I have a lot of experience with the eligibility study, the housing study, knowing the criteria and the act, knowing the act itself. And then Kathy is one of the best TIF experts around. So she would work on the redevelopment plan. We already have the new comp plan to go off of what what future land uses and things like that would work. So that is also the way we would see it going. Also, it would want to be done by before 2018 to get those base EABs from 2017.
Two things. Have we considered looking across the river to the north side, to Main Street, just that area? Would this be something that could be flushed out during the study to figure out if there's a benefit to bringing in some of those to help offset?
Yeah, I think that was my initial reaction, especially based on previous city council comments that, there is a limited commercial strip there that could potentially benefit from it. And I know initially our concern was that we would be adding too many homes on the north side of the river that it would trigger a housing study, but now we've already been there.
And that's why my thought is, and some of those have potential for redevelopment of large lots. The city has potential for land that's over there. Any pros and cons there?
Well, the other con, too, is that a lot of the property on the north side of the river is in much better condition than the property on the south side of the river.
And that would that be something we could bend through the process of the study?
Right. Yeah. In an eligibility study, you want to prove your criteria is happening throughout the entire area. If it's all on the south side of the river and you can't, it hurts your eligibility.
We'll look at it.
Because what I'm looking at is
and a boundary issue
just a little north. Does it help or does it hurt? To go through the study, this is the point of it, just to find out.
Absolutely.
And then the other I had, with the new boundary that's being proposed, we do have an elected official within one of those properties.
Oh,
that would have to be
carved out. That's exciting. Okay.
Correct.
I didn't.
You can carve it out, or
I know this was a big issue with the last one. That's why we have one of the downtown parcels removed.
Which parcel?
Joe?
Bill Schuske is in.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that when I
drew it. That's something we would need to
I know the bigger issue with the last elected official was because she was the mayor. So that caused a pretty big issue just with promoting really any economic development issues. So I'll bring that up to Kathy. I don't think that had been raised yet as an issue.
I noticed as I was looking for it because I know which one it is. But
the boundaries are flexible, too.
If there's no issue with it, I don't have a problem with it.
I gotcha.
Just thought I'd bring that up there.
Typically, you take those parcels out. You can leave donut holes. It's right, okay. Right. I've done that before, just so then the board members still feel like they can vote.
Well, right. She's not in the existing TIF.
No, she's not. If you look on Exhibit B, where the main parcel is, the sliver, it's next to the sliver.
North or
and
south?
A is the existing
It'd be
one.
South.
South.
So, yeah.
And okay. So it was not included on the original.
Okay.
But if it's fine to do it, okay. Yeah, I'm okay. Keep going.
Keep going.
And it's good that this is being done in-house to save us.
Yep.
When we do the study, will we use someone like the Elliers or someone like that there? Would that be under a 20,000, we think, or what?
Do you think that we need an outside consultant to do any part of the housing study?
No.
Okay.
None of it? Okay. So all of that can be done. We're not going to have to cooperate. Okay, great.
So Jason is saving us $30,000 probably?
Whatever Kathy threw out there. I don't know. I just do the work. I never charged anyone. But it'll be, a substantial saving.
So before we move on, what time frame are we looking as far as the other taxing entities, knowing how they're filling?
I would say within the next 90 days. So if we have more of a comprehensive report and analysis available next month at EDC, we can say here's the materials that we're going to do. I'd want you guys to review the entire outreach plan so that you're comfortable with it and really can be a communicating entity if needed.
Can one entity stop it?
I'm not aware of the record of the state legislature in approving extensions if somebody objects. Kathy had phrased it to me as you really need unanimous.
That's what I had thought before. I heard said it had to be unanimous, but
So
I didn't know if one could, so I would say one could stop it.
Potentially, yeah. So
we have some public meetings. Would we create a outreach program, campaign of here's a community meeting, here's our information, going through on that one? Would we do that in house?
Yeah, the last time that we did the downtown TIF plan, we held two public meetings and a formal public hearing, and the public meetings were held at the old courthouse. For that, we did have a consultant running it. It was the full dog and pony show.
Right, and that's what I'm getting at. Is it something, in order to facilitate and make sure that we're putting our best foot forward, it's not just, you're the city.
Sure.
That's why we paid the consultants to do that part, to do the show for you.
Yeah.
Do we think that that might be beneficial, or should we at least look at the cost of it?
We'll look at it. We can talk about it later. I love giving PowerPoint presentations, so I'm always happy to do it.
Yes, you are.
But we'll review that as time gets a little closer. So if we think that it's a benefit, I couldn't imagine that running the actual public hearing and outreach would be too difficult for a planning firm to do, similar to our comp plan. So
it'd be small. Yeah. And you think next month you'd have an outline of the timeline and process?
Probably.
Yeah, if we get a thumbs up, me and Kathy are going to work on month by month which days, because we have to have a public meeting for the housing study and a public hearing for the overall.
And even if it changes, because we're up against that.
Right.
Timeline.
Exactly.
So we've got a
Probably at least have, once the eligibility study is done, typically at least when I was at the planning firm, we would do just a general, here's where we are in eligibility, at a city council meeting.
That'd be good to have the timeline.
Okay. Nothing else? On to old business, EDC 2017-20 vacant building registration program.
Alright, I'm not going to belabor this. Hasn't changed anything much from when it was at City Council. The only one thing I do want to mention is it was brought to my attention again that commercial, again, is included in this, and we had an incident with one of our vacant commercial buildings. It was the old Office Max building,
was vandalized. If this was in place, they would have had to register with us and would have been quicker finding out who the owner was instead of having to go with you.
But how would you stop the vandalism from happening?
We would not have stopped the vandalism, yeah. But it was very difficult. Well, it wasn't very difficult. It was a little bit of a chain of who's the representative of the building now? Who do we go to? And we had to go through Lynn to give us a contact to find out. You know, the police didn't know right away. They had to contact us. So it was a couple of steps there that if we had this information, the police would have already had a contact for that. It could have also prevented because there would have been a requirement for exterior lighting on the building between nighttime hours, between 10 and I think 7 in the morning. So could have deterred somebody, possibly. We don't know. But those are just things that we put into the ordinance. As you know, we did have some conversations with the Realtor Association of Fox Valley. Alex Fink is here. He and I spoke at great length. We went through some of his concerns, tried to address them, and we came to some consensus on a couple of items. And it was his discussion that, you know, if we could incorporate those couple suggestions that he brought up, that there could be support.
I just want to, and I'm really sorry for how I went about this. I always try to work through staff. Staff is the expert in running government, and it's the reason why I'm sitting before you and I don't have a realtor here. But because of the timing of this and when it popped up on my Google alert, and I've been working like 12 hour days for the last month, and I'm just tired. Also, I made a mistake. Just because of the title of the ordinance at licensing, you all absolutely have home rule, as not home rule community, have authority to do a simple registration. And as long as, I mean, exterior lighting is another issue we could have a conversation about. But, I mean, essentially, with some tweaks to, the definition of owner, some tweaks to definition of evidence of, you know, vacancy, you know, the placards on Waukegan does that, has the placards on the spaces. It's just a bad idea. I mean, those simple little things. I understand why staff wants that, but it really, it's like, hey, criminal, well, there's nobody here. You know, it's that kind of stuff. But I don't, you know, the couple questions I would have is, it's from the data that I've seen, your vacancies are decreasing in the city while you're growing. I mean, you're one of the only communities in Kendall County growing. While your vacancies, other than you had one low year that, and then you had an uptick, you've been decreasing every year since about the 2010 census. So I'm not saying it's 100% necessary, but again, I would trust your staff as the experts. So if they're telling you it's necessary, maybe it actually is. And a simple registration, this is a minimal. All we ask for is realtors. And let me be very clear, if it was only about realtors, I wouldn't even be here because you already gave us an exemption for actively marketed property, which is the first thing I ask for any of this. And we're really here to be a community partner. And I would say at $150 with no inspection requirements, let's have another conversation about commercial areas and mandatory lighting. This is a good idea. I mean, this is the most least intrusive with the few changes that we talked about yesterday on the phone. This is one of the least obtrusive vacant property registrations that I've ever seen, and I cover about 120 municipalities for the owner realtors. That's all I would. Those are some of the things that I would ask. And before I yield my time, I just want to say, depending on the parameters of your housing study, I know I'm not here to talk about that. We can actually do a free analysis for you through our land use attorneys, through the National Association of Realtors. I just got to look at and see what your housing study is going to entail, but we'd be more than happy to do that. It's Robinson and Cole out of D.C. We do it all the time.
Awesome.
Good Lord. So, yeah, no, I come bearing gifts sometimes.
There was some gifts to this, wasn't there?
So, that's all I would like to say.
Chris? Alex, I read through your email initially and then the follow-ups. You're kind of spot on with a couple of the items in terms of tightening up some of the language. That's been some of our content of discussion is some of the language is a little broad. Can we tighten it? Can we remove some of the burdens, some of the restrictions? And I appreciate you saying that this is one of the least burdensome. When we removed the inspection component. I mean, that was a big issue.
Well, no, and I think, Kathleen, your corporate counsel was spot on in requesting that, because that's where it gets into a gray area, and that's where you get into a legal gray area in terms of your authority as a home rule versus non-home rule. You know, so that was the best thing. You know, the only other thing I would like to, you know, just try to make sure that the paperwork is for the, because that's the other thing. It's not all about cost. I do try to value my, you know, landowner, you know, property owner's time in terms of filling out, you know, the paperwork. But I mean, your liability insurance ranges were good, you know, and it's just, and again, it's just, I've always seen worst case scenarios. And you have to remember, I mean, I fought tooth and nail on Aurora. I mean, Aurora originally wrote theirs in a way that basically said, and they said this in their economic development, I think it was a similar, whatever their counterpart committee is. They literally said, their corporate counsel said, we would never sue a realtor that if the owner didn't follow this ordinance, but we need the ability to. And that just made me, like, get livid. So, you know, that's one of the reasons why I just want to tweak, you know, the definition of owner a little bit. But, I you know, at the end of the day, if you guys have an issue, knowing, you know, look, knowing who your landlords are, knowing who your vacant property owners are in the least burdensome way possible is value for any community.
I mean, my concerns are, you know, how much control we have at the administrative level. You know, it's our administrator or the designee would be the person making the decision or dealing with the appeal, and then obviously it would go to adjudication.
So, I don't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead. You know, our language, obviously, as we've gone through the determination factors, you know, I mentioned in the past I had a couple of concerns about that, but then, you know, the definitions, I thought they were a little broad. If those could be brought in, and I'm still not certain about the fee. I know we removed $100 for the what the fee would be if we had to do, what was it?
The inspection was $50, and then we lowered the overall application by $50.
Yeah. So
I don't like all the government that goes after the registration. I don't mind the registration. But there's a lot of other stuff that happens. First of all, do you have to have homeowner's insurance if your house is paid off?
No.
Because it states in here you have to have insurance. So,
if you want it to burn down. And
yeah, you're just SOL, right. So. That's what I thought. But in here it said you had to, if it's a property, you have to be insured. If I read it right. And
if you're part of the registry, yes, you have to have
insurance. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
if it's vacant.
If it's vacant.
Evidence that it's vacant, and it's for an extended period of time, so it's not like if it's vacant for like 3 months or.
And I'm going to use 804 Morgan.
Pardon me.
Well, I'm sorry. What's the period for vacancy?
It has to be 12 a year.
Has to be a year.
Yeah. Or there's evidence that it's in foreclosure, sure. So then we know, you know, or there's been a.
Yeah, I mean,
an external.
Year's okay. I mean, I hate to say that. I mean, I'm pretty comfortable from my standpoint with the year. That's pretty generous. And to your point, which I think is spot on, and so is yours, Alderman. So one of the things that I would ask for a change that I didn't make it because I tried to keep the my memo to the elected officials at a higher level. I really want to hammer out, you know, respect staff's expertise and hammer that out with them. But if you change under the section of the draft ordinance, vacant building determination, subparagraph A. If you every time where it says director may evaluate building and you just change that to director shall, I mean what that essentially does, and again this is worst case scenario, and after talking to Christy on the phone, I trust that she wouldn't do this, but unless she's immortal and promises to never leave,
I
you know, what I'm worried about is the director that comes after. And so what happens is when you write it and you say may, the director, you have all these criteria, but the director may take them into consideration. What you're also essentially saying is that they may be able to just like not, they don't like the landlord. They, you know, had a bad day that day, maybe, you know. And so tightening that up, you don't have, then you're basically protected there. You're forcing, you're laying out certain criteria, which I have issue with some of the criteria for evidence of vacancy, but some of the other of it's great, other of it's spot on. You know, you're forcing them, you get that to a measurable metric and a list, and then you say that the director shall, you know, consider these factors, and that's all they can, that's their parameters. And then,
and I think on that one there most certainly should be a checklist that goes with it, that has the criteria, who's doing it, what prompted it, and that goes on record in the file that, you know, if somebody challenges it or if there's question, you know, that worksheet is the definitive go-to. This is how this issue came about. I think that would be good to have in there.
That's required of written findings.
Of written findings, but, you know, that's the report. Obviously, it's there. It has to be signed off on. It should have all those criteria checked off, basically a series of check boxes, and then any notes. You know, one of the things in the definition, I talked about the multi-tenant buildings. I think that one's broad. I would be more comfortable having a percentage base on there. As I was reading, I came across not all of them, but several of the ordinances, which is very, very typical for the ordinance in our in northern Illinois. Most language is identical. But several of them did put in a percentage of, on a multi-tenant building, six or more units or 10 or more units, 90% of vacancy or more sets the threshold. I'd just be more comfortable having some type of a, you know, actual number. Some, and this is where I keep coming back to, some of them are too broad for me. And if it's something we can put in a number that makes it definitive, I'd be more comfortable. And then the last one, where we have, obviously the initial review is going to come through community development. Correct, Christy?
Correct.
And then if there's an appeal, or, you know, it goes through administrative, administration. Whenever it references the administrator, it's or designee. I would like to make certain that there is a way that those can remain separate departments. Because what if the designee is the community development director? Then you have the same person who's actually doing the
determination, field
determination and the appeal. I would like to make certain that...
I'd rather have an issue with that.
Okay, if we can come up with language that would separate those... So yeah, I don't think it was the intent, but...
It would just make it clear that the designee could never be somebody who's been first level.
Exactly. I don't want it to end up... Christy did the initial report, and then Bart, I don't have time for it, so Christy, would you mind please doing this?
Designee again.
Yeah, I would hate to see that, because then it could be questionable.
Sure.
If we can come up with language, that would make it more palatable for me. That's what I have.
Well, obviously, after it's clear Christy talked to the Real Estate Association, and there's some input. I mean, obviously, it's not going anywhere today. It's going to sit here on the committee, so let's update.
I would like you to really think about, I'm going to give you the 804 Morgan Street property because I learned a lot about this in the past week. That's something that's been going on for a year. We know about that one.
Right.
And we still are struggling with how to handle it. And now we're taking on all this more stuff.
Yeah, but I also don't want to make it sound like this ordinance would cure these problems.
Right.
No, I don't think it doesn't.
It still exists.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
We have a hard enough time curing the ones we know about.
Right.
This registry is just to find the ones we don't know about, right?
Well, I mean, the office, I mean, that's a... Because the issue happened. We wouldn't have prevented it. Could we have maybe...
They could have bored the window.
It would have been a quicker response.
Right, it would have been a quicker response. We would not have prevented that issue.
Right.
Now, if the lights were operational, that would be, as Chris said, deterrent potentially.
Sure.
But I don't think it would have stopped.
Well, the home on Morgan Street, that's been foreclosed on, right? I'm still not sure. I'm not still sure.
Yes.
I heard it was foreclosed.
It was an eviction.
It
was foreclosed and rented and then evicted, right?
The property entered foreclosure. It was foreclosed on.
Okay.
The original owner was foreclosed on.
Yeah.
The bank that foreclosed on the property did everything shy of going to the county and registering themselves as the owner of the property. Technically, right now, the property is still in the name of the gentleman named Mike Madonna, who has not owned the building or had any sort of contact whatsoever with the bank. As far as his attorneys, and he tells us, he does not own the property. He was filed bankruptcy, was discharged during his bankruptcy. But our county still says that he still owns it. He could go in and contest it and have his attorneys do the whole nine yards, but he's in Texas now, and currently... His bankruptcy, he's already 4 years into his bankruptcy from this initial thing where this property was discharged under that back to the bank. So the bank that he owed the money to owns the property. In Texas, that's their standing. here, they haven't filed the paperwork with the county, which is their legal right not to. The state does not force them to do it in a certain period of time. So, as far as we know, Mike Madonna still owns it.
Do we have water? Does that house have water, or has it been turned off?
It does have water because it has a registered user who was the tenant that rented the property
right.
from the original owner.
And then he was evicted, right?
He was not evicted.
Okay.
The bank never did anything. They kept telling us, oh, we're going to evict them once we take possession of the property. And then that was after like 2 years of trying to get them to admit they had possession of the property, and now they'll quasi-admit they have. Yes, it is going to come on board of our records, but it's not ours yet. It's still... resides with the original owner, even though he's in foreclosure. I'm like, well, I have records saying that it was foreclosed by you. The property's been discharged in a bankruptcy proceeding by a judge in Texas. Well, that's Texas, it's Illinois. We haven't claimed it yet. Exactly what I was told.
So it's still, because the person told me they didn't have water, we turned the water off, and I heard also that the gas was turned off at one point.
Well, it's still occupied, so we can't turn the water off.
It's not paying the bills.
I cannot say for sure, but I spoke to Judy about the residence, and I think it was $509 he was in arrears on it, and they were getting ready to shut him off unless he made a payment. I don't know if he made that payment or not, but we can't shut him off, restrict the use of water or any type of life safety amenities the city gives for anything shy of a breach of the contract that he has with the city, that he's going to pay his water bill. I can't go say Judy shut the water off because he has property maintenance violations.
Haven't we done that before, though?
No, not because
no property maintenance. Got sued.
No, just simple.
So that's what I'm talking about. Okay.
Well, I mean, he owes money at this point.
Right.
Yeah, but that's a contract. Then when you sign up for water, that's a contract.
My point is, is water being shut off?
I'd hesitate to get into the discussion of the details of the property and payment versus non-payment, whether the water is shut on or off. There are some, you know, individual confidentiality issues there. So, you know, property maintenance issues and vacant registry issues, you know, can be discussed.
My point is, knowing the guy who lives there, knowing the issues we've had with his property for years, amount of registry would have stopped the problem. It would have accelerated us being able to contact the owner, and that's about it.
Okay.
All these other problems would still be there.
Okay.
Right. Yes. All right. I say we kick it to next month, see a new draft.
Thank you. Any additional business?
Get beaten down again.
Yes.
And then try it again.
Any additional business?
No.
Chris?
Nope.
Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
It's 8:45, my pants are 7:45. My pants are